I'd like to welcome everybody here tonight. We need to excuse the chairman, Dave Black, and so I'll try and fill in for him. I'd like to also welcome Donnie Hunter from the Wildlife Board and Steve Dalton from the Wildlife Board, and also the DWR director, Greg Sheehan, has joined us here tonight. And first off, let's introduce the RAC board, starting down on the end with
Nick.
Nick Jorgensen with the non-consumptive group.
Braden Richmond with Sportsman.
Sean Kelly, Forest Service Rep.
Wade Heaton, at large.
Mike Worthen with Iron County at large.
Kevin Bunnell, I'm the regional supervisor for the division in the southern region.
Greg Laub, Iron County Agriculture.
Gene Boardman at large.
Brian Johnson from Enoch and non-consumptive.
Harry Barber, BLM.
Okay, that's all we've got here tonight. Let's go ahead and jump in and finish this meeting up as quick as we can. It shouldn't take us too long, hopefully. Anyway, we will start off with the wildlife update from...
We need to accept
the RAC minutes of last meeting.
And the agenda.
Do I have a motion to do that? Okay, Craig Laub made a motion to accept.
Braden seconded.
And Braden seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Unanimous.
Then we need to jump into item number three, a wildlife board update, and we'll have the regional director, Kevin Bunnell, do that.
Okay, the board meeting went very similar to the way our RAC meeting went, and the board followed on the path very closely to the way that this RAC voted on the issues. The significant issues were scopes on muzzleloaders. The board voted in favor of that. That was an interesting one because it was three RACs did not like that recommendation, two did, but then we had the survey from the public, and I think that's what probably swayed the board. And so beginning next year, you will be able to put magnified scopes on muzzleloaders. The rest of the big game recommendations essentially passed as recommended. There was a vote similar to what happened in our RAC to address the age objectives on elk on Monroe Mountain. The board ultimately decided to stick with the division's recommendation on that, and so essentially we had the Monroe come down one age objective and the Panguitch Lake and Dutton come up one level in age objective, so that those are all at the same objective for the next 7 years under the elk management plan. The other issue that came up in our RAC, you remember, was an issue that was raised relative to the no-shooting zone at Gunnison Bend Reservoir. When the division became aware of that, we actually added an agenda item specifically to deal with that at the board meeting. And so we amended the rule that governs that to make the high water mark the no-shooting zone at Gunnison Bend Reservoir. You recall there was an oversight on our part that extended that no-shooting zone out 600 feet from the high-water mark. That's been changed, and will be in effect prior to the light goose hunt that'll take place in March. And so I think that issue's been addressed. Those are kind of the highlights from the board meeting. If any of you have questions on other items from last meeting, the CWMU and Landowner Association recommendations and rule changes all went forward as recommended. Any questions those were kind of the things that we took most of our time with here at the RAC meeting, and the board essentially followed voted very similar to the way this RAC did. So with that, you want me to jump into our regional update? I'm going to take a little bit different tact tonight with the regional update, and we've been asked to put together a list of accomplishments by our director's office, and I did that with all the managers this morning. And it's a pretty impressive list. I just want to briefly run through these are specific to the southern region, some of the things that have been accomplished over the last 12 months. Some of them you'll recognize, some of them might be new to you. And the first couple are related to our efforts down in our Washington County field office, dealing with the Virgin River Fish Program effort. They've made huge strides down there with species like spine dace and wound fin, which are at 15-20 year highs in their distribution and populations, and that's been done largely with the cooperation of the local water users, which is saying a lot. You know, when you're dealing with water in a place like Washington County, there's a lot at stake, and they've been able to do that and do it in a way that it doesn't compromise water in that area, which is saying a lot. We also did several fish removals, Gunlock Reservoir, Stratton Pond, the Virgin River Gorge, and Mammoth Creek, again, all in efforts to restore native fish populations. We've installed aerators on lakes on the Boulder Mountain that will make a huge difference to those fish populations going forward. We've put two in so far. We'll probably have 8 to 10 up there as we have funds to do it. One of the ones that we put in this fall, the aquatics crew went and checked on it last week, and it's doing phenomenally well. These are solar powered, and there's a couple of acres of open water Jim, were you up there with them? In Pear Lake, which has winter killed a lot in the past. We're hoping we can solve that problem and carry fish over from year to year in those lakes, and that'll be a great resource for people. A lot of you remember the perch tournament that we had up at Fish Lake last year. That was a phenomenal success. Over 2,000 people attended that. That will probably grow this year. It's already scheduled for January 30th, again, in cooperation with SFW. I don't think it's any secret to this group, and we can't take all the credit for it, but we'll take some credit where we can. With the deer herds right now are probably in the best shape they've been for 30 years. Mother Nature has a lot to do with that, but I think our habitat projects and the work that's being done in cooperation with our federal agencies is certainly having a positive impact there as well. We just recently rebuilt the pronghorn trap, and that'll serve us well for another couple of decades like the old one did. And on that note, we have canceled the pronghorn capture project for this year. That was going to take place next week, but we elected to hold off for a year on that. You know, some other highlights, with the Twitchell fire, what, probably 10 years ago here on the backside of the Beaver Mountain, created a huge opportunity for cutthroat restoration, and that's now the largest drainage that's been restored back to native cutthroats anywhere in Utah and potentially anywhere in the West. That's been a huge project that was essentially the flood events that happened after that fire depopulated those streams, so we've gone in and restored the streams so that they're stable, and then reintroduced native cutthroat trout into those drainages, and that's been a huge undertaking. Our pheasant program, I think a lot of people are taking advantage of that. That's turned out to be a real positive thing from a public relations standpoint for the division, and is going well. And then We have a lot of capture projects that we get the public involved with, and research projects that always are highlights for interacting with the public. So I just wanted to take a minute. There's some some other things here on the list, but I'll leave it at that. Wanted to take an opportunity to brag about my staff a little bit. We've got a fantastic staff here in the Southern region. As I, we had our Christmas party today, and I mentioned it in the party, there was our region comprises about 16% of all the employees in the Division of Wildlife, and at our annual awards ceremony in August, 40% of the awards went to employees of the Southern region. So a little bit out of balance there in our favor relative to the the size of our staff, but we accomplished great things, and proud to be associated with the crew that I have. So if with that, if there aren't any questions, we'll get on with this meeting.
Thank you, Kevin. The next portion, we'll jump into the presentations and recommendations and motions. And just to kind of an outline of what we're going to be doing, we will have the presentation, and then we will set aside questions from the RAC, and then questions from the public. And when the public provide questions, make sure it's questions and not comments on your position, but questions on to clarify an issue or whatever else. Then we will hear comments from the public. If the public does have comments, please fill out a comment card and pass it up front here so we can get you on schedule. And when you do come to the mic, specify your name and who you represent. And then please be succinct. We won't put any time limits unless somebody starts getting really long-winded. But be succinct and get to the point so we can move on. And then we will open it up to comments to the RAC and then move towards a motion at that point in time. So let's jump into the first presentation, which is R657-3, Rule 2 of Amendments for Live Lobster, and Kevin Bunnell is going to give that for us.
Thank you. Don't blink or you'll miss this one. It's very short, and essentially, would you go ahead and advance the slide for me, Lynn? And this is probably an oversight. Our current rules require a certificate of registration to possess live aquatic animals for commercial use, which means that restaurants and grocery stores that, that have live lobster tanks and things of that nature technically at this point would have to have a COR. That isn't happening. It doesn't need to happen. And so we're amending this rule to just put an exemption in place for those types of situations. So, Lynn, would you go ahead and advance to the... So in order to exempt these situations, we've amended what we call our CIP. So marine aquatic animals do not require a COR if they spend, if the animal, you know, lobster are a great example of this, if it spends its entire life cycle in a marine environment. It's not a species classified as invasive or nuisance by state or federal law. It's used for immediate human consumption. It's obtained legally, and it's not released live. And that's the gist of it. And essentially, this is just covering grocery stores and restaurants that, that have tanks for live animals that, that people take on, either cook, that are either cooked on site or taken home and eaten. And that's it.
Okay, do we have any questions from the RAC board? Any questions from the public? This is an easy one. This is how we like them. So we will entertain a motion at this time. Or comments, public comments. No public comments passed up from the public. Any public comments from the RAC? Seeing none, do we have a motion? Motion made to pass the regulations by Craig Lobb, seconded by Harry Barber. Do we have a discussion? Okay, let's move to a vote. All in favor? Any opposed? Motion passed unanimously. The next item on the agenda list is the 2016 Black Bear Recommendations and Rule Amendments. And Leslie McFarlane is going to give that to us.
Okay, just a little bit of history for a reminder from last year. So our black bear, we have a Utah black bear management plan that was established in 2011. It's a 12-year plan, and that plan basically requires...
Yeah. Hello?
There we go.
You can hear me anyway. I'm loud. But that plan requires that we make recommendations every 3 years. We're kind of going off of the plan because of changes that we made to hunting bears last year. We made some pretty drastic changes by adding a season, allowing the take of bears using a rifle over bait, and we were concerned that we might do a little bit of over-harvest in that with those changes. So we're planning on evaluating our harvest and making recommendations yearly until we feel comfortable with that, and then we'll go back under the plan and do 3-year cycles. But basically, the plan was put together. These participants, and Kevin Bunnell actually was the mammals coordinator at the time that the plan was put together. So these were the participants. So the plan goal is to basically maintain a healthy, balanced bear population, taking into consideration things like livestock depredation, nuisance and human-bear conflict, habitat limitations, other wildlife species populations objectives, and then, of course, recreational opportunity and providing opportunity for sportsmen and houndsmen. And then we define a healthy bear population as one that maintains a proportion of breeding age animals that will maintain population levels consistent with habitat and maintain genetic variability. So the plan gives us guidance on how we'll make permit recommendations. We have three different strategies that we use, and it's based on the needs of each of our 30 different wildlife management units across the state. Some of the considerations we take into account are human and nuisance conflict, livestock depredation, like I said, and then we look at the age and the sex and of the harvest of the bears in each of our units. A unit with a light harvest strategy is one where we have a low bear population. We're trying to increase that bear population, and so we maintain lower female harvest, and we want it. It has a lot of younger males in the population. We're trying to get those to grow up. In order to qualify for this type of strategy, you have to have a low level of human bear conflicts and little to no livestock depredation. About 25% of our units are under a light strategy. The most common strategy for management for bears in our state is the moderate. This is where most of our units in the state fall. So we want to see a female harvest between 30 to 40% because we are trying to manage the population. So we do want to harvest some females. These units have some level of human bear conflict, livestock depredation, but it's not taking over everything. Sport harvest is higher than DWR take or Wildlife Services take. In this, we like to see our adult males being about 25 to 35% of the harvest being about 5 years or older. So if it's higher than that, that means you've got a lot of older age bears. The next strategy that we use is a liberal harvest. This is one where we've got a lot of human bear conflict. We've got a lot of livestock depredation. We've got bears that just are getting into trouble. We've got some habitat issues or things like that. And on these units, we're trying to decrease the bear population. So we want to see a higher female harvest. We want it to be at least between 40 to 45%. And we want to see our older adult males to be less than 25% in our harvest. The current status of bears in the state, bears are doing really well in our state. One of the requirements we have for all of the bears that are harvested is that a hunter has to bring it in and we check the carcass, we take a tooth for aging, and so we record the sex and age. And we've got a tremendous data set, over 15 years of harvest data, and so we're able to kind of rebuild the bear population based on known ages. So looking at that, we estimate right now, in 2009, based on population density estimates, our bear population was estimated to be around 3,500. We believe that it's up a little higher than that. We estimate right now that we've probably got around a minimum of 4,100 bears. Also using bear denning data, so each of our regional offices have female bears that are radio collared, and each spring they'll go into the den and they look to see if they've got young with them, the condition of the young, the condition of the females, and that kind of gives us an idea on the bears going into the winter and what recruitment will be and survival. So right now, bears are doing really well. We estimate that we're seeing a population increase of about 5 to 6% annually. So our average statewide hunter harvest success rate is usually between 42 to 45%. In 2014, it was up to 50%. This last season, it was at 47%. So it went down just a little bit, but we also increased permits quite a bit. And the permits that we increased were hunts that are a little bit harder to be successful at. So that'll affect your success rate as well. In 2014, our sport harvest was 283, and our total harvest was 378. So the difference there between the sport harvest and the total harvest was nuisance. We had a lot of nuisance bear problems last year, and between Wildlife Services and the Division of Wildlife, we removed 95 bears. That was a trend we didn't want to see continuing, and so some of the strategies and recommended changes were to try and reverse that. We wanted to see sportsmen taking the majority of the bears in the state and reduce the ones that we were taking. So what we tried to do was, rather than dump a whole bunch of more permits and increase permits, we played with seasons and methods to try and increase success of the permits that are already out there. So based on all of that, this past season, our sport harvest went up to 325 from 283, and our nuisance take went back down to 45. Now, I can't attribute all of that, because it could have been weather conditions that caused some of the nuisance problems. It could be, you know, reduced food mass and all of those types of things. So I have to be a little bit careful interpreting that because we did this, it reduced nuisance problems. But we would like to see this level of harvest maintained and the trend continue. So we're going to recommend pretty much the same thing as last year, with a few changes here or there. So as you can see, this last year, the line with the triangles are the number of permits and the trend in permits that have been offered. From between 2014 and 2015, like I said, there was a huge spike in the number of permits that were offered. A lot of those went into spot and stalk on the LaSalle's and the San Juan and those types of things, hunts that were less successful. So although we increased permits a great deal, we didn't increase harvest tremendously. We're within the same levels as last year. The one thing that I want to show you, though, is that sport harvest increased. So the light bar, the light colored gray part of the bar, is our sport harvest. So it increased to the level that we wanted to see, and then depredation and nuisance take, the darker part of that bar, did decrease. And again, just another, and it's hard to see that, sorry, I apologize. Just another graph to show you that in 2014, we did have that blip and increase in nuisance and livestock depredation, and it's higher than it's been since before 2006. So we did want to try and address those issues and try and get that down, and you can see that this year, 2015, we're back a little below the trend. Don't go to sleep now. Okay, so I'll just go into the seasons and what we're recommending for seasons. So last year, one of the major changes that we recommended, previously we only had a spring bear hunt. One of the things that we were trying to address were, first, conflicts between hound hunters and bait hunters during the spring season, and then we also wanted to try and increase the success during those spring hunts. So one of the things that we did was recommended a spring limited entry season that we don't allow bait hunting. It's basically a hound only or spot and stock type hunt, and it would run from April 2nd through the first week of June. And based on this past season's numbers, so the percent permits filled, it's not success rate because we didn't do a survey and find out how many people did or did not hunt. This is just based on the permits that were issued, 49% of those were filled during this season. So the season that we added was the summer limited entry, and during this season we don't allow the use of hounds, primarily because we have a lot of concerns during this time for fawning and calving and all of that occurs. During this season you can use bait or you can spot and stalk. One of the recommendations that was made last year was to allow anyone using bait to begin baiting 2 weeks early. It was changed by the Wildlife Board. Originally, the division's recommendation was not to allow any overlap between those two seasons because of conflicts, and we did receive some complaints during this last year, primarily, and I don't know that it's really more than a perception thing, but if you bait and somebody has hounds and they run off of the hounds with the scent of the bear, more than likely you're going to run through bait. And so that there is the possibility that conflict exists. Most of the complaints came off of the Wasatch West unit. There were people that felt that people were hound hunting off of their bait. There were some people that were upset because somebody else hunted off of their bait. So it's just to try and avoid that conflict, the division wants to recommend that we allow them to begin baiting 1 week early, but they can't start hunting until June 4th. And the percent permits filled this past year during this season was 62%. And the one thing to remember, too, is that now we allow the use of any weapon over bait, which we didn't allow previously, so that's probably part of the increase in the number of permits filled. We're recommending, again, a fall limited archery-only, bait-only hunt. This hunt only happens on the Buck Cliffs unit. The season dates for this would be August 8th to September 9th. The weapon type would be limited to archery tackle only. You could bait or you could spot and stalk. One of the complaints that we got this last year was that we allowed the summer hunters to begin baiting 2 weeks prior to the season, but we did not allow the same thing for any other bait hunters during any of the other seasons. So the recommendation is to allow them to begin baiting 1 week before the season starts for anyone that uses bait, but they cannot start hunting until August 8th. Again, this is only on the Buck Cliffs unit. The percent permits filled. When I sent my letter out, there was an error on it. It said 0%. It should have said 40%. Okay, it's jumping ahead on me. Our fall limited entry season, this is our traditional season that we've always held. There are really no changes being recommended to this. The season dates for this would be August 20th to September 26th. Shut down for the general season, big game seasons, and then open again October 29th and go through November 17th. The percent permits filled during this season were at 41%. And again, if they use a bait during this season, we'd like to allow them to begin allow baiting 1 week before the season starts. There is a difference on the dates for the LaSalle and the San Juan. We're recommending that be from August 13th to September 9th, which is similar to last year. The percent permits filled on this, we're only at 8 and 4%, but again, a lot of these were spot and stock, and so that previously our spot and stock type hunts, this unit, it's got spot and stock included in it, so it shouldn't, but it drives, it makes it look less successful than it is. And then on the Book Cliffs, Bitter Creek South, we're recommending that season from October 4th to November 17th. And then we do have a recommendation for spot and stock. Again, this is the Book Cliffs Little Creek Roadless, a spring season from April 2nd to June 3rd, and then a fall season September 10th to November 17th. And then on the LaSalle and the San Juan, October 4th to October 25th. And like I said, last year our spot and stock success rate was up near 20%, but we did increase a lot of permits in this, and it drove our percent permits filled down to 6%. We're recommending limited entry multi-season permits again. If you are successful in drawing one of these, you can hunt any of the seasons approved for the unit the permit is authorized for. You have to use the appropriate weapon type and method for the season being hunted. It cannot be used during harvest objective seasons or for pursuits. And the percent permits filled during this season are at 49%. We will have some units. These are mostly our heavy harvest units that are under this type of strategy. But again, this is harvest objective. These units, we sell an unlimited number of permits. There's a quota set on that unit. Once the quota is met or the season closes, then the unit closes. We're recommending a spring season date of April 2nd to June 3rd, and the percent permits filled during that season were at 95%. Fall season date is only on the 9-mile unit, and that season will run from September 26th to October 28th. On that unit, it's spot and stock only. No bait or no hounds are allowed, and the percent permits filled on that unit last year was at 70%. And then I'll just kind of, so a lot, like I said, a lot of the recommendations are staying the same as last year. There are a few changes here or there based on harvest from this last year. So the northern region really had no changes. They're recommending that they keep their permits exactly the same as they had last year. The northeastern region, now when I originally sent this out, the northeastern region had made some recommended changes on the Book Cliffs. They've since amended that recommendation, and they've gone with exactly the same thing as they had last year. The only other changes in the northeastern region, a decrease of 3 on the North Slope West Agate 3 Corners, and an increase of 4 on the Wasatch Mountains of Inequin. Central region, the Wasatch Mountains West was one of the places where we had a lot of livestock depredation problems. We met our quota really quickly this last year. The region felt that we had addressed some of those issues and they wanted to decrease, and so that's why we're recommending a decrease of 15 there. Our southeastern region is still having quite a few nuisance and livestock depredation problems, and so they're recommending an increase almost on every one of their units down there. And then I'll let Teresa explain the southern region next for you.
All right, not a whole lot of change. The beaver, we are recommending a decrease in permits by 5 permits from 22 to 17. Fillmore, Monroe, and Mount Dutton will all remain the same. The Panguitch Lake, we recommend a decrease of one permit. Ponsagant, we recommend staying the same. The Kaparowitz, our bear population there is continuing to do well. We're still well within the parameters, so we're increasing seven permits on that and an increase of one permit on the Plateau Fish Lake.
Going on, general pursuit, we're recommending season dates similar to the previous years. Restricted pursuit, we're not recommending any changes. These are primarily summer hound training seasons. On the Book Cliffs, the LaSalle and the San Juan, which are our most desired bear pursuit units. The region would like to keep these at these levels right here for another couple years and then flip-flop them. They get a lot of nuisance bear problems during the summer months. And there is some thought that pressure from hounds, pressure from the public, pressure from camping, and all of these different types of things might lead to that. And so they want to keep it at this level to see if they can detect a change if we run it at this level for a couple of years and then flip-flop it. We're recommending one rule change at this time, and this is at the request of the U.S. Forest Service. The process to obtain a certificate of registration from the Division of Wildlife to bait requires that you get permission from the landowner, a private landowner, the BLM, or the Forest Service before we will issue you your certificate to bait. The Forest Service has and Sean will probably help me on this. They have a rule that's been in place that says that they cannot give permission to do that activity on their lands. And so they've requested that we take that out of rule. We're not exactly sure how the process is going to go going forward, whether or not they give us a map and then we issue CORs based off of areas that they mark out on the map, or whether or not they will issue closure on specific parts of the forest to baiting. So that part still has to be worked out, but this rule changes to accommodate them. The BLM did not make that same request, and so we're leaving the BLM. You still will have to get permission from them. So in summary, we're recommending a total of 705 permits. This is an increase of 14 from our recommendations last year, which we feel were really successful because we were able to increase sport harvest. We did see a reduction in nuisance and depredation take by both Wildlife Services and the Division. And although we increased permit numbers, we didn't see a huge increase in overall harvest. We were within 8 bears of where we were at last year. And just a breakdown by season, you can see where the increases or decreases are coming by season. And that's what I have for you.
Okay, do we have any comments from the, or questions from the RAC members?
So just from the southern region specifically, to add some information to the thing with the Forest Service, we've already started a dialogue with both forests in our region, and we will create a map that will issue baits based on a map that's come up jointly between the Division and the Forest Service, and so we'll continue and produce that. It'll be easier for the people applying for a bait because they'll just have to come to our office, and we'll have all the information.
Okay, Wade.
So clarify for me, Leslie. Currently, 2015, the summer season, they could start baiting 2 weeks before the season started?
Yeah, that was a recommendation that came out of the board meeting. The Division's recommendation was that they could only begin baiting the date that the season opened, but that was changed through the public process.
Okay, Craig.
As I look at this trend, if it was a financial report, it would look really good, but how many bears do we really want?
Well, so there's not a management goal or population management objective for bears. What really drives it is nuisance, depredation, human conflict, and all of those types of things. So that's what we use as a driver for our recommendations process, and habitat conditions and needs of other wildlife species.
Okay, and then I guess my other question is over here on the, talking to ranchers on here on Beaver Mountain, they're seeing more bears and more conflict, and I was wondering why you dropped that 5.
Region? I'll let the region answer that since that's their recommendation, so.
You know, that's a good question. With changing, we're right where we want to be with as far as the plan on the harvest with the bears on the beaver. And in years past, we have seen increased nuisance issues, but we did increase the tags pretty liberally last year when we had that third season added. And just some of the feedback that we got on that and some of the harvest reports and people calling in and complaining about different crowding issues, we decreased maybe one or two tags for each season. So we tried to do a minor decrease, but it was a tough one to try to adjust because we are very close to where we want to be on as far as the harvest data is concerned.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
I'm doing on what I don't run cattle up here. I'm just going on what I've talked to guys when I see this coming up. So.
Yeah.
Riley, what was your total harvest in 2015 versus 2014? How much did we increase the harvest last year?
I have that pulled up on my computer. As I recall, I should have brought that paper with me. I don't know that gives us the total harvest.
Why don't you could go look that up
and
come back?
I'll go grab it off. It was 9 in 2015, and I thought it was 8 in 2014. So 9.
So all you're killing is 9 bears, then.
And it was very similar to the year before that when 2014 and before we had a harvest objective season when 0 bears were being killed in that fall harvest objective over the counter tag. And then, so we did increase a lot of tags, but we were given more opportunity in the spring and the fall, not just that harvest objective season.
I guess my only other comment is I'd like to see that on that chart. I'd like to see that leveling off as far as the bears taken because we're killing what we need to kill to keep the number. I think in my opinion the bears, there's a small population of people that are hunting the bears and they affect a lot of other things. So
let me help Riley out here just for a second. So on the beaver unit specifically, it's managed under a liberal harvest strategy, which means we're trying to reduce the bear population. Right now, our adult male take on that is at 26.1%, which is in the moderate level, so it's a little lower than we want it to be. But the female harvest is at 46.7%. So it's where we want it to be for harvest. We're taking females and to reduce the population. And you have to remember with bears, it's a 2-year cycle. They don't breed up till they're 4, and it's 2 years before the cubs leave. So you do have an effect when you take females out of those populations.
Okay, any other questions for Leslie?
Okay, go ahead, Brad.
Just a question as I was looking at numbers, and you kind of already answered it. You said that we don't really have a harvest objective for bears. But you said in the presentation, success or total harvest last year versus 14 decreased. So we're decreasing total harvest. You're estimating population is going up by 5%, yet we're only increasing tags 2%, not 5%. Why wouldn't we increase tags at least consistent with population?
Because the one thing that we did, but it's not really clear, is that in 2014, sportsman take was 283. If division nuisance take and wildlife services take would have been similar to what it had been in the past, that would have been only an additional 45 bears. So it would have only been 283, 310 bears. Total harvest last year was 378 because the division took and wildlife services took an additional 95 bears. So what we did is we shifted harvest away from the division and we increased sport harvest tremendously. We increased sport harvest by over 20%, which was what we were trying to do, and then we put division take back down to only 45 bears. So although it's kind of a numbers game, we increased sport take quite a bit, by 20%.
Yeah, and that's great, and frankly really commend you for making that change, because why wouldn't we want sportsmen to harvest those? But the total numbers are still the same. We're still decreasing total harvest, increasing total population, and yet not increasing tags to keep up with total population.
Well, and that's like I was just explaining here. You've got bears that are long-lived, and so you've got some reproduction issues, and we don't want to come in and over-harvest and then have to try and build it back up. So it's better to take it in increments and monitor each of the units and the female harvest that we're taking and making sure that we don't do it too much too fast.
Any other questions for Leslie from the RAC? Any questions from the public? Okay, Troy. Or Jason.
My name is Jason Aiken. My name is Jason Aiken, for representing myself. Just a quick question here. So on the beaver unit, if you're saying that you're where you need to be for harvest, and just like Braden said, if the population's growing, why would we be decreasing permits? If we decrease permits, that population would continue to grow, and then you would get farther out of balance, wouldn't you?
Where'd Riley go?
Yeah, that is a great question and a great point. And so I'm not, when I sat down to make the recommendation on this, there were many things that I tried to look at. And I did take into consideration how many bears we harvested year after consecutive years in a row, looking at 2013, 14, and 15, the number of tags we got, and then also the input that I was getting from the hunters calling me about bait stations and where they were running their hounds and talking about how they've noticed an increase of hounds and hunters in the area. So with the relatively same amount of bears harvested, I made the recommendation to decrease one tag in each area just to provide some relief. We are right close to where we wanted to be with the harvest numbers, with female harvest and the male harvest, and the population is growing slightly, but we are not responding with that in the number of bears we are killing. We're still only killing about 40% of our tags. We're only filling 40% of our tags. And so it was maybe sometimes it's an addition from subtraction, trying to think if I'm getting comments on overcrowding, well, maybe if we decrease the people running, then we might kill more. It's just, it's that fine art that I don't know that I have a perfect answer to, just trying to solve a problem from what I am hearing. So,
and it appears to me that what the
reasoning behind this was more public pressure or pressure from the interest groups that are out there saying there's too much hunting going on in that unit or whatever else, rather than trying to really move the population up or down. Is that right?
Certainly, yeah, when took into consideration.
Right. Okay.
Okay, thank you. Another question. So the summer bear hunt, there was the archery and bait. Wasn't that prior to last year? Didn't that overlapped with the spring hunt, right?
Yeah. So before last year there was only one spring season, and it started about the same time that the spring season starts now, so April, and it went to the first week of June, and no. Or second week of June, I can't remember.
It went to the end of May.
May, that's right. Yeah. It went. Right, and so we changed it, and it was both. Sorry, I forget, but it was combined, so it was both hound and bait during that time period.
And overbait, it was only archery.
Okay, and then Brian, you brought it up last year. We were kind of pushing something last year to maybe on that archery hunt. Over the season, continue to leave that in the spring hunt. Isn't that kind of what we were kind of looking at, being able to leave those together? And the thought was we'll have problems with dogs running, hounds running across baits and stuff like that. Well, during the fall hunt, it's baits and hounds. So how can we have a problem in one and not in the other?
Because in the fall season, bears are much more difficult to bait, so there's not as much interest in the baiting. And so, but during the spring, bears are much easier to bait.
And the numbers in the fall are way
less. And then, yeah, and exactly what Kevin said, the numbers in the fall are a lot less than what we have in the spring seasons.
Okay. All right. One last question, I promise. On the Forest Service, where you're not required to get permission, or are they saying that they don't have to give permission? Does that mean we can still hunt? You can still bait on? You just don't have to have the permission from the Forest Service anymore, but you can bait on the service.
So what you'll do is if you're going to be hunting on Forest Service properties, you'll just come in, you'll give us the same coordinates and all of that that you've always given us in the past. You just won't have to bring in the thing that said you talked to the Forest Service first.
I have one question on that, Leslie. When on that specific issue, when the Forest Service sits down and does their map, isn't that giving permission?
Sean, would you like to answer that?
You're brave.
Yeah. It's not technically permission. The way the process worked before is pretty awkward for the sportsmen. They'd bounce back and forth between the division and the Forest Service, and quite a bit of frustration at times. So the more we looked into what we could do, we really don't have the authority to approve bait stations. And so we will provide input to the division. And there are some things that we can move, we can step in if it's a health or a public safety issue. We can, move those bait stations away from things like campgrounds and things like that, but we cannot approve or actually deny the actual bait station itself. So we'll provide our input, probably in the form of a map, to the division, but it's not our decision to actually approve those bait stations.
So one thing that hasn't changed, even though they're taking themselves out of the first step, is that by rule, we still won't allow bait stations to be within a mile of a campground on heavily used drainages or trails, trailheads, those types of things, near buildings and that type of thing. So in essence, it's not changing a whole lot other than you're just not going to go to the Forest Service and get permission.
Basically, you have to go to one government agency instead of two now, and we're pretty much, we're not out of it, but we don't deal with the public. We'll deal with the Division of Wildlife.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the public? Okay, if not, then we'll move to the comment sections. Do we have any comment cards that came down?
Michael Gillens. Is he gone? Or are you not going to? Okay. That one's.
Jared Higgins.
I'm Jared Higgins. I represent the Utah Houndsman Association. I'm just going to read you a letter from them, short. The Utah Houndsman Association has had the opportunity to review the DWR's bear recommendations, and we support the DWR proposal as presented. Our members and board, thank you for your time and willingness to serve and dedication in conservation and protecting a bettering Utah's resources and wildlife.
Hey, thank you. And Bryce Pilling.
You won't have to move the microphone.
I don't?
No.
That's nice words, isn't it, Bryce?
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Bryce Pilling, sportsman for Fish and Wildlife. We support the division's recommendation with one exception. We'd like to see the pre-baiting season at 2 weeks rather than the 1 week. And we'd like to thank Leslie for all the work that she's done on this. Thank you, guys. Thank you.
And then Mike Twitchell.
My name's Mike Twitchell, and I represent the Utah Bowman's Association. Overall, we would like to support the recommendations proposed by the DWR with one exception, that exception being upon the pre-baiting. Rather than the 1 week recommended, we'd like it to remain the 2 weeks. Last year, the Wildlife Board approved it to be 2 weeks. We'd like it to remain the same. Thank you.
Okay, no more cards, then we'll ask for comments from the RAC members. Seeing none, we'll move into discussion. Recommendations that we've got so far, we do have concern about reduction on Beaver Mountain, the number of bear permits that were is suggested to be issued this year. Went down by five permits. We have a recommendation to keep pre-baiting or to
at 2 weeks
instead of moving to the one as recommended, and one group accepting the proposal as presented. Okay, do we have a motion
or discussion?
Ryan?
I was just going to make one comment. I guess I'm a little confused why the Wildlife Board would make that recommendation. A year later, we come in and shorten that up a week. So if there's more discussion, we can have it. But I want to go ahead and make a motion that we go back to what the Wildlife Board approved last year with the 2 week baiting.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved that we go back to the 2 week pre-baiting, and seconded by Brian, moved by Braden. All in favor? Or question?
Discussion.
Or discussion?
Discussion.
Can I ask a quick question, Leslie?
Yes.
Leslie, what was the reason they shortened it from 2 weeks to 1 week? Is there any reason not to move it back?
Well, I shortened it. The reason that I shortened it is because I am still getting complaints over conflicts between the two seasons. I'm still trying to allow the ability to do it, but I'm trying to shorten the time period that conflict would take place.
How many actual, are these registered complaints that are recorded and documented? Because I've asked to see them before, and I never get them.
I've had them. They called me directly. There were five.
Five?
There were five.
What units?
Wasatch West, which is what I said earlier.
perfect.
Okay.
It's really difficult because a lot of the complaints that happen with law enforcement. They don't always happen with our biologists. They don't always happen with me. These ones happened to me. They were very irate people, and I'm trying to reduce that conflict. That was the whole reason we split those two seasons in the beginning in the first place, was to get rid of that conflict. If we're going to do it, let's make the conflict as short as possible. That's why I requested the 1 week. Now, if I could get all of those complaints from all of our law enforcement, that would be great. But if you go to each of the regional offices, each one of them deal with them differently.
The one thing you got to realize here, guys, is if you're a bear hunter, and I've spent a lot of time chasing these things, if you start baiting these things in June, it takes a solid week and a half to 2 weeks to develop this bait. By the time you're killing them, it's already July 15th, and you're at pretty big risk of having hair slip. At this point, it is a huge advantage to be hunting these, to be pre-baiting these things in May. My dad had a tag on Elk Ridge. It is apparently one of the most popular units in the state to hunt. And looking at this, and this is, I didn't realize this, but they're running hounds in the pursuit season down on Elk Ridge from July 4th to July 18th and from July 25th to August 7th. So they're already training dogs down there during this hunt. And I never saw anybody. And I was down there for 9 days with my dad hunting bears. So I get the Wasatch may have had a problem, and that's fine and dandy, but these guys, if you don't want to have a conflict with your pre-baiting, don't pre-bait. It's pretty simple. You don't have to go and pre-bait. If you pre-bait or if you hunt at the same time the houndsman can hunt, be a big boy, put your pants on, and realize that you are putting yourself in a situation where there may be a conflict. If you don't want the conflict, don't hunt early. I don't know why we have to babysit these people. It's ridiculous. Sorry. How you guys doing?
Thank you, Brian. Yes. We have a more discussion?
Yeah, please. Leslie, is it just as Brian describes, the ones baiting are the ones complaining?
Yes.
All right.
Since I made the motion, can I add a comment to that?
Okay, go ahead.
Before we vote on it, I just want to second what Brian said in less words.
If I could learn how to do that.
We'll see if I actually do it. But this is a real simple issue. The ones complaining are the ones baiting. We're allowing you to bait 2 weeks early, understanding you're baiting with hounds. So my advice to law enforcement is hang up on those buggers.
Okay, we've got a motion and a second on the table. Are we ready to move into the question? Okay, the vote. All in favor? All opposed? Unanimous. Motion passes. Well, we had one abstention. Okay.
So now we need a motion on the rest of the
Yes. Do we have a motion on the recommendations?
Let's keep talking for just a second. Because I like bear hunting. I like it a lot. I've actually had 2 tags in Utah on the Zion unit. That's a pretty tough hunt, and I did it in the before we had the summer season. And I've been asking since I moved down here to give us, that 2 weeks in June just to continue. I mean, I love the summer season. This is fantastic that we get to hunt that first 2 weeks in the first couple weeks in June before they start to slip. It's great. Those bears are active. It's amazing. But under the same logic we just used 15 seconds ago, if you go throw a bait out knowing that there could be conflict, why not let those guys hunt in that spring season when they can throw a bait out? Why don't we overlap it? Last year we had 4 organizations that said they were fine with this happening, with the 2 week overlay. We had 4 organizations. One of those was the Houndsman. The other one was Utah Bowman's Association, And historically, the Bowman's Association with the bow hunters were the only ones that were hunting bears over bait before that. So they kind of understood the risk they were taking, saying, hey, let's just get some more opportunity out there. My take is if they don't want the conflict, they can not have the conflict that last month of the season. They don't have to go hunt them early. I just think that the houndsmen don't necessarily have a problem with it last year. I make a recommendation that we move that summer season up 2 weeks and overlap it.
Okay, is that a new motion to?
That is a new motion.
Okay.
We've already discussed that we're going to let them bait. I'm just making a motion that we extend the summer season 2 weeks prior.
Okay.
Baiting season and the hunting season would overlap, would be continued.
Just be the same, yeah. That's my motion.
Okay, do we have a second on Brian's motion?
I'll second it.
Okay, seconded by Braden. Any further discussion on the amendment?
Go ahead. Okay, so let me make sure I've got this right. So the motion, we just passed a motion to allow, or you just passed a motion to allow pre-baiting 2 weeks prior to the non-hound season, the bait season starting. So now Brian's motion would essentially make the prior motion irrelevant because it's to not just allow pre-baiting, but to just move the season date for the baiting season 2 weeks prior to what's proposed by the division, which would essentially make the first, that motion that we just did, it would go away at that point. Because you're not pre-baiting anymore, you're just hunting.
Yeah, microphone.
If we passed it, if we don't pass it, I don't want to lose the 2 weeks of pre-baiting.
Okay, but you're not saying go another 2 weeks prior to that. You're just saying be able
no,
to hunt.
I'm just saying to be able. If you go out Memorial Day weekend and throw a bait out, I'm saying that if you see a bear, you ought to be able to just go ahead and shoot. I mean,
we're saying we're not pre-baiting. We're just starting the season 2 weeks
early. That's what I'm saying. Yes.
Okay. Does everybody understand that?
Okay.
Are you still seconding that, Braden?
Yeah. You know what might be simpler is to just say dates instead of 2 weeks. If we wanted to make it simple.
So I'd have to pull a calendar out and see those, but yeah, let me grab that.
I don't know if that's simplified or not. Just an idea.
We can
figure out.
We'll figure that out later.
Here's the thing is we're looking at a 67% success rate on that summer hunt, and if they're throwing donuts out the right way, which there's not a lot of wrong ways to throw donuts out, they're not shooting bears because they're not seeing a big enough bear. It's a matter of these guys being picky. You've got 49% on the multi-season hunting. That premium bear tag, they're only killing 49%, guys. It ain't because they're not seeing bears. It's because they're not seeing the right color or the right size is what we're talking about here. We're not talking about not seeing enough bears. I guarantee you that, I mean, we had 12 bears on our bait down in Elk Ridge last year. It's just,
okay.
And hounds running.
Let's go ahead and move to vote on the motion. All in favor?
Come on, do you like shooting stuff? Don't you like shooting bears?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you got a count, Tracy?
Yeah.
Okay, all opposed?
You got 3-3.
Hold on a second, I have to see who's
the
vote.
Terry,
Sean, opposed. Okay,
thank you. Okay, is it 3-3?
Yeah.
Then do I need to vote?
So who didn't? Who did we have?
We have one abstention.
One abstention. Okay.
Bob didn't vote. Agriculture didn't vote in a length in the bear season. I want to make sure I'm clear on that. Okay. I want to make sure I'm clear.
Okay. Then the vote fails.
We're tied.
We're tied.
We've got two abstained, right? Are you abstained, Greg?
Just undecided.
Okay. So we've got.
Let's redo this. All in favor of the motion? Okay, all opposed? Okay, and then one absent. Or absent, abstention. Okay. Okay, motion passes. That was a good one. Okay, now back to the original recommendation by the DWR. Do we have a motion or a discussion on that?
I make a motion that we pass the balance of the motion as is.
Okay, moved and seconded by Wade to pass the remainder of the recommendation as is. All in favor? Or discussion?
Discussion. I was really hoping Ag would step in here with their comment on the beaver and increase the tags there. I'm from Beaver. That's where I'm at, representing sportsmen. I've had the same comments to me, but primarily they're coming from the ranchers. Ag, you got any interest in making an amendment there? You want me to do it?
I guess my thought there was listening to, I don't know who he was.
Riley.
Anyway, as he's saying that the reason they're not success is they're crowded. I was just taking him at his word that if we'll still kill as many or more bears if we, you know, and I agree it doesn't always help to increase the numbers if you got too many people there and you can't get to the bears. So, but then the other thought was maybe they're not seeing as big a bear they want to kill or the right color of bear. I don't know. I've never hunted bears, so I don't know. And maybe that's the problem.
Okay.
I'll go ahead and make a motion then. I want to make a motion.
Hang on. Didn't we have a motion already on the table?
You have to amend it.
I want to make an amendment. Sorry. All right. I want to make an amendment that we just maintain the same amount of tags from last year. At least we don't have a decrease. It's a liberal unit. We're managing it as a liberal unit. So I'd like to at least not see tags decrease. So my amendment is that we keep the tag numbers the same as 2014 on the beaver unit.
I'll actually allow that into my motion if Wade will second that.
Okay. Okay. We've got a motion and a second to for the remainder of the recommendation, with the exception that we maintain the same number of tags on the beaver as was last year. Okay. All in favor? Or go ahead, Gene?
I think we'd ought to go along with this amendment. More opportunity for hunters to draw a tag, more people to have a chance, and I think that we'd ought to keep those tags where they were.
Okay. Thanks, Gene.
Just to keep the process clean here, Brian, we're gonna vote on an amendment, and then we'll go back to the original motion instead of.
However you'd like to do it.
Okay, it's going to get us to the same place, but it keeps the process cleaner.
If you want to do it that way, I will.
Did we have a second on that amendment?
Braden, did you do that?
Braden made it.
Motion. Brian
seconded it. Okay, is that straight? Okay. All in favor of the amendment to increase.
Keep the tags on the beaver the same as 2015.
To keep the tags the same as 2015. All in favor, raise your hands.
Unanimous.
Motion passes. Now, back to the recommendation or the motion to...
the amended motion.
Is it for the amended motion?
So now we've amended the motion. Now
it's the remainder of the recommendation.
No. So now your motion has now been amended. So now the motion that you're voting on is that we're passing the remainder with the exception that the beaver stay the same.
Right.
The number of tags on the beaver stay the same as 2015. We voted to amend the motion. Now we've got to vote on the motion that has been amended.
That's already done.
Okay. Are we all clear on what we're voting on now?
Yes. Can we still have a comment?
Yes.
So, just a comment. I think some of the frustration that has been coming from just the whole permit increase, permit decrease idea,
I hear it as well. And I think, Leslie, that the recommendation she makes makes a lot of sense, because our bear populations, as she mentioned, we're not managing total populations. We are managing, we're recommending permit numbers based upon complaints, whether they're crowding complaints or whether they're human conflict complaints, which to me is a really weird way to manage bear numbers, but that's what we're doing, I guess, which until we decide to go a different route, that's just fine. And the other side of it is, I kind of agree with Brian in that bear hunters, and I do hunt bears, and I love a lot of bear hunters, some very good friends, but they will always complain, let's be honest. And so whether they're houndsmen, whether the guys on the bait, they're going to complain, and I don't know that we need to get in the habit of making a lot of recommendations, changing recommendations based upon those complaints, because I don't think we're ever going to make them happy. I think that the region is recommending some good numbers based on input that they're getting, but I think we should probably approve it as it is.
Okay, now are we ready to vote on the motion?
As amended.
As amended.
I think so.
Okay, all in favor? Raise your hand. All opposed? Unanimous?
Yes.
Okay. Then let's move on to the next item, which is Sheeprock Mountain SGMA Greater Sage Grouse Translocation, and Avery Cook will give us that presentation.
All right. I'm Avery Cook, Upland Game Project Leader for the division. I'm here to propose the Sheeprock Mountain Sage Grouse Management Area Greater Sage Grouse Population Augmentation. Just a little background on the sheeprock sage grouse population and sage grouse in general. So just recently in September of this year, sage grouse were declared not warranted under the Endangered Species Act by the Fish and Wildlife Service. However, Utah is still moving forward with conservation actions, including proposals like this transplant and also considerable amount of habitat work to benefit sage grouse. The Sheeprocks Mountains SGMA in particular, that population is critically low. The rest of the populations in the state are actually doing pretty well. This transplant that we're proposing is in addition to a considerable amount of habitat improvement projects that have been done in the past that are ongoing and that are planned for the future. The sage grouse is a state sensitive species, so in order to do a transplant of sage grouse, we need a management plan which is in place. We need a resource development coordinating committee approval of the project, and that RDCC process is complete. We didn't receive any comments. And the final step is to get your approval, the RAC and board approval for the transplant. The overview of what we are proposing for this transplant is we'll be moving sage grouse during their breeding season, so in the spring, March and April, we'll be capturing the birds on their breeding grounds on the leks and following guidelines from previous successful transplants, namely the Strawberry Valley sage grouse transplant, sage grouse augmentation there, which was also coupled with quite a bit of habitat work and predator control. So what we're going to be doing is transporting and releasing the birds the same night. So we'll catch them in the evening, drive them in the middle of the night, release them at dawn on active leks in the sheeprocks. The reason we do that is because they stay on site a lot better rather than wandering off, and their survival is also higher when they can join a resident population. We'll be providing predator control. There's been some in the past on the sheeprocks, and there's going to be increased effort into the future coupled with this transplant effort and other habitat work out there. So we're proposing 3 years of transplants, so 2016, 17, and 18. We're looking at moving 30 female and 10 male sage grouse per year we're going to be monitoring the birds that we move, and also the resident birds. We'll be able to compare the survival rate of the resident birds versus the translocated birds, and also be able to look at their movements within the SGMA relative to some of the habitat improvement projects that are going on out there to help guide future habitat improvement projects. We'll be moving birds from the Box Elder SGMA or the Parker Mountain SGMA based on weather and logistical concerns. These populations are genetically similar. Both the Box Elder and Parker Mountain are some of the biggest populations we've got in the state, very stable populations with robust populations. And they're also geographically close enough to the sheep rocks where we can actually get that capture and transplant done the same night. Just to give a little bit of background about why we're moving birds from the sheep rocks, that top graph represents our statewide sage-grouse population on our SGMAs. They're normally a cyclical species, about 8 to 10 years, they'll go through a population cycle. Since a low in 2012, we've had a steady uptick throughout the state in all of our SGMAs except for the sheep rocks. That bottom graph represents the sheep rocks, and you can see the population has just continued down since 2012, so we're concerned that if this trend continues, that we could totally lose the population. So we're stepping in with the transplants to basically buy us some time for the other measures that we're doing, make sure that we don't lose those leks and that there's enough hens out there for successful breeding and increases in the population. Just to give you an idea of the relative number of birds we're moving, that left bar on the graph represents our estimated box elder population. So we estimate there's about 3,100 sage-grouse out there. We're estimating 3,900 sage-grouse on the Parker, and we're only proposing to transport 40 of those birds from the box elder and Parker populations to the sheep rocks. So that represents roughly 0.5% of those two populations we're proposing to move. That's it for the presentation.
Okay, do we have any questions from the RAC?
Go ahead.
I'm just curious, do you know what's caused the population in the sheep rocks to disappear, and if you don't, what's to say that planting new ones there is gonna that they'll survive as well?
There's a number of factors. It's kind of death by a thousand cuts. So we've got one of the big ones is invasive, different invasive plants. So there's some annual grass, but a big chunk of that is just juniper encroachment into the sagebrush. So as you get junipers in, the junipers displace the sage-grouse. Sage-grouse won't use areas with the trees. If you cut down the trees while they're still good understory, you kind of have instant sage-grouse habitat. So we can expand habitat quite a bit through that. There's also been some predator concerns out there, so we've got a contract to do some predator control out there. There's some recreation concerns with motorized recreation, and we're looking at ways to address that problem. So I think we can make quite a difference in habitat through kind of focused effort in that SGMA. And this is basically buying us time to get that work done.
Okay, Braden, did you have a question?
Yeah, I do. And I know this is one we're supposed to just sign off on and call it a good night so we can go home. But I think the grouse, this is a huge issue in the state of Utah. I mean, it's got major implications. So I think it's one to talk about a little bit. But I do kind of have maybe a crazy question, but help me understand. This will be one of the few times, this and horses, when you'll see me agree with Mr. Yardley, and it's too bad he's not here to hear it. But the question I've got is, he brought up in the last meeting the grouse. You know, grouse are an issue with bringing the wolves in. The KSL ran the story this week, a couple of newspapers ran the story about the Mexican wolf coming in. Is this, do we have potential in Utah to use the grouse and the work we're doing on grouse to stop the wolves?
We'll manipulate it if we can.
I see Avery up there with a dumbfounded look, Connie, wondering where to go to that. So let me try to help him out. Welcome to the Southern Rack, Avery.
Thanks, Kevin.
You said I could go ahead.
Yeah, well, I agree. It's a huge topic. I don't see. Essentially, we were successful with sage grouse in terms of keeping them off the list. I have high hopes that we will be successful in keeping Mexican wolf recovery within the appropriate habitat, which is they never occurred in Utah. I don't see that there's a relationship between the two.
So when we're talking predators, what is the primary predator of sage grouse? Primary is probably other birds. What impact do coyotes and bobcats have?
So primary predators are, so you have raptors. Coyotes take some. Red fox, and if you have red fox in areas, they can have a major impact. Ravens on eggs. And so all of those things are being addressed, in not only in the sheeprock population, but in populations across the state. I don't know that there's a documented occurrence of a wolf killing a sage grouse. Jason, do you know of any? So I don't see that there's.
I don't want to broadcast that.
Strike that from the record.
Well, it's the truth, and so we gotta deal in the truth here, guys, and that's what it is. So.
Right. Just a question. Maybe this is back to Kevin. So we talked about predators, bobcats, coyotes, fox, and you mentioned raptors and ravens. Are we doing things to curtail that predation?
Yes, and Jason, jump in here if you, or Avery, if you want to add any. Yeah, maybe this is probably better for you than me.
Yeah.
That question.
So the primary predators we're concerned about for the sheeprocks population is ravens, red fox, and badger. So the Wildlife Services contract will be putting out poison eggs for the ravens and targeting red fox.
Okay. Any other questions from the rack to Avery? Okay. Any questions from the public? Okay. Seeing one, that we don't have any comment cards. Do we have any comments from the rack?
I want to make one quick comment because I had a strange question. I just wanted to compliment the division on the work they have done there. We've seen a huge success in Utah. Thank you for it. Thank you for your continued efforts. So this is good.
Any other comments? Okay, let's go ahead and move to the motion.
I'll make a motion to accept the recommendation.
Okay, it's been moved that we accept the recommendations by Braden. A second. Harry seconded. Okay. Any discussion? Let's vote on the motion. All in favor? Any opposed? Unanimous. Motion passes. Okay, let's move on to other business. We have Director Sheehan that wants to say a few words. So come forward.
I just wanted to take a moment now that we're sort of at the end of the year and in the holiday season to thank all of you on the Regional Advisory Council here for your service throughout the year and all the hours that you put in, you know, attending these meetings, driving all over the state, taking phone calls and emails and text messages and all the things that come with being in a public service role that you all are in, you know, working for us here at the Division of Wildlife or with us here at the Division of Wildlife. So thank you. And I got to take a moment. We've got a lot of our employees. They had their Southern Region Christmas party today, and some of the folks who are in the room here weren't able to attend that. So I want to wish them a Merry Christmas and thank them as well. And a lot of them are out doing deer captures and collaring and work around the region here. So these folks are out with the division, our employees, you know, in a lot of cases, 7 days a week trying to do good things for the wildlife. And I think it's working. They're doing a great job, and we certainly appreciate you helping us, guide us with your recommendations at, you know, at, in the regional level here with how we do that. But I think things are pretty good for wildlife right now, and I got to give the credit to our employees out there for the countless hours. I don't think he's here. But also, right before the meeting, I ran out to the pheasant farm here in Richfield that has been worked on with the Division of Wildlife for the last couple of years, and with SFW. And I want to thank Jake Albrecht, especially as a former RAC chair, board chair. He's put in countless hours, I think, out there. Vance, isn't he? You know, Vance as well has done just a phenomenal job out there, and I want to acknowledge him for that. You know, what a great partnership. And, you know, people said we want pheasants again, and, you know, maybe they're not all natural out there, but we're getting them back out on the landscape, and I think that was really a great success in the last couple of years. So a lot of good things going on, and I do want to thank everyone in the room. And I don't know if our board members want to add anything. I might put them on the spot here if you got just a minute, and then everybody I know wants to get out of here. But
I've talked to a few people with the Hughes Pheasant deal out there, and they just got great reports. They just had a really good time having a riot out there shooting those pheasants again, and there's a lot of public paying attention to what's going on. So I know James worked pretty hard at it. I don't know how many pheasants they've turned loose. How many do you know?
You know, they told me, and I want to thank Kendall Bagley, too, because he and Vance and Jake, probably the three of them, I think, have grown all those things. And a lot of folks here, Heather and Lynn and others, have been pretty instrumental in getting them out for everybody to hunt. But I think about 3,000 birds this year, and they've still got some hens that they'll let go in the spring with some roosters, try to get some wild populations established out there a little bit. But that's just one example. A lot of great things going on with our fisheries group, our folks working on endangered species, our folks doing big game everywhere you look. So anyway, it's a good time to celebrate all the successes. So that's all I had. Thank you, hey, Mr. Chairman. Okay, Donnie.
Pheasants give our youth opportunity. We need to keep those youth involved. We just passed one of our best deer hunts that we've had in a lot of years. And there's a lot of nice bucks still left out of our winter ranges. Looks really good. So you guys have done a lot of good work. We just need to keep it up. We're a good team.
Not to pile on here, but Donnie brings up a good point that right now is when our deer herds are most vulnerable, and it's when our law enforcement guys are putting in a lot of time at night, making sure that those bucks aren't being taken by people who are working outside of the rules. And so any help that you can get for them, if you ever see anything that you even have a question about, you know, they're more than happy to go out and stop somebody and question them and make sure that everything's on the up and up, because right now is the time when you know, things that would none of us want to see happen at times.
And of course, they need to have that online, right in their phones on speed dial. So if you see anything, you've got it right there. You haven't got to look for a number. So quickly we can get that information to the right people. We're very careful.
Okay, we thank the comments. One thing I can attest to the pheasant transplant program yesterday morning as I was driving to work, there by Rolling Rubber on 200
right in the middle of
south, there was a hen that ran right across the road in front of me, and I think it was somebody who was raising it there and got out, but surprised me. We also, as a RAC, I think we thank, and I think everybody is unanimous in thanking the staff that provide all the information to us, to overload us, to stand up here and bare your souls and take all the heat that is thrown upon you. But we do sincerely appreciate it and wish everybody a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. With that, do we have any other business to take care of?
Next meeting.
Next meeting is April 12th at 5 o'clock. We don't have a day, place yet.
Yes, we do, but I don't remember. It's Beaver.
It's in Beaver. And more information will come.
Hey,
say meeting adjourned then.
But wait, can we really, with the analysts, these little slideshows, if we can get them before, if we can get that email to us before the rack so we can read them, it clears up a lot of questions that we have. I know I've asked for them before.
The slides in addition to the packet?
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
Yes, please.
Awesome.
Okay, good. Thank you, Tracy.
Okay.
Yeah, especially on that.